On the way on this edition, Davy Lloyd's Radio Moments, the latest ramblings from James Cridland. We'll also hear from Siobhan Kenny at Radio Centre about radio being announced this week as the fastest growing medium in terms of advertising spend. And Allard Hayden-Jones from Radio 1 tells us all about what happened behind the scenes and the planning production for Radio 1's Hide and Seek.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
It is the weekly podcast from Radio Today. I'm Stuart Clarkson. That's all still to come on this podcast. We start, though, as usual, by getting on Roy Martin, Radio Today's founder and editor, for a chat about what's been going on this week in radio.
Let's get it on.
And it doesn't seem like 7 days since we were talking about 2BR having a birthday.
I was going to say, what were we saying last week? We said, here's to the next 18 years of 2BR because it's just come of age and celebrated its birthday. And now it's Meta Boy and everything's gone to shit, as somebody put on Twitter quite nicely. But it's not that bad. It's just the fact that Global's bought 2BR and it's going to become a global brand. They haven't said which brand, but what's your money on, Stuart?
I reckon it's got to be Capital. And when deregulation comes, they've got one in Manchester, one in Liverpool, one covering Lancashire, and that all becomes one station. Easy.
Well, that's the obvious choice, but I don't know.
No? I know you suggested it could be Radio X.
Well, I don't think it will be Radio X because they've got national coverage, haven't they, on D1. So I don't... It could be LBC. For all we know, but the obvious one is Capital. So yeah, maybe we should roll with that. Capital Lancashire.
And a lot of people say, no, death of local radio in Lancashire. There'll be no local radio stations left. But it safeguards the station's future, I guess, being part of Global.
It saves the frequencies that they're on. It doesn't necessarily save local radio because 2BR 24/7 from the area, most of it non-stop music overnight, etc. But, you know, local content, local news was there during the day. It won't get that as Capital. It'll get a minute of headlines. So things are changing. But are people in Burnley and Blackburn and Preston that bothered about the big change? All that'll happen for them is they'll switch on 2BR one day and it'll be banging out some younger hits and that'll, you know, they'll carry on listening or they'll find heart. So Global will win.
Yeah. And I suppose the other question that this raises is, where does it leave UKRD? They've just sold Sun FM. They sold Star in Cambridge a year or two back. It looks like they're on the way out of radio from the sales, certainly over the last couple of years.
Well, are they? I don't know. I think we're in the middle of something with them. So let's see what that is when it happens.
Excellent. So also this week, it's been a big week for radio news, actually. We've had quite a few stories. Small-scale DAB, Ofcom have announced that they're looking for declarations of interest, expressions of interest for people wanting to run small-scale multiplexes or beyond small-scale multiplexes. It doesn't mean there's any legislation necessarily coming from government yet. They're just planning, ready for when that happens.
Yeah, and it will happen. Small-scale DAB has been trialled for, what, 2-3 years in 10 places. So it will happen, whether there'll be 100, 200, 300 of these mini-muxes all over the country. That's what we're about to find out, or Ofcom is about to find out. Hopefully they'll tell us about it. And we'll see if there's one going to be popping up near you.
And talking of popping up near you, just come on air today as we record this, Ipswich 102, replacing Town 102. They're going to launch in October on FM, replacing Town after winning the licence, and it's appeared on DAB today.
Yeah, I didn't realise this was so soon. So October is when the licence switches over. And this is quite a smart move, isn't it, from them? So Ipswich 102 will be on air at the same time as Town 102, the station that it's going to be replacing. So it's got time to build up an audience and kind of say, hey, look, we're here. I wonder what Town 102 sounds like at the moment. Are they saying, oh, we've only got a couple of months left? Or are they just getting on with it?
I doubt it. No, I think they'll just be getting on with it. I haven't heard it. But yeah, obviously Town 102 hasn't been on DAB, I don't think, has it?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? That's why they lost the licence, because DAB is not really something Celador are big fans of.
Mm. Interesting. So yeah, a good 2.5 months of pre-launch on digital only.
Fight. I like Ipswich 102. I also like Town 102. But which is the best?
We also mentioned on the podcast last week about Russ Williams, and there was an announcement coming. It turned out to be TalkSport. He was on air this weekend.
Yes. Did you hear him?
Nope.
Neither did I. Let's move on. Well done, Russ. Welcome back.
But yeah, so I don't know if that's a regular thing or whether it was a one-off for the weekend, but well done TalkSport for signing Russ Williams as well as John Motson, if that is the case. Absolute Radio are going to be 10 this year, and they're doing a little gig in London town to celebrate.
That's flown by, hasn't it? 10 years since Absolute Radio took over Virgin Radio. That just seems like 4 years ago, certainly, surely.
It doesn't seem that long ago, but yeah, apparently it's 10 years. Blimey, 2008.
It's crazy. I look forward to our invite to the party. It looks good.
We're in London that day anyway. Hint, hint.
Are we?
Yeah, it's the night of Drive to Digital, I think, isn't it?
Oh, well then. Come on, Kat, give us an invite.
I think I've booked my train. I might miss that. But Manic Street Preachers, George Ezra and Blossoms playing a gig at the Shepherd's Bush Empire for Absolute Radio's 10th birthday.
My love. My love.
And then the end of that week, BBC Music Day just announced as well. Kylie Minogue leads BBC Music Day celebrations. All the radio and TV services from the BBC are kind of coming together for a day of music. There's going to be a big freshers party in Brighton that Radio 1 are doing. Jeremy Vine's doing stuff, Radio 3, Radio 4. A lot of the nations and regions will be getting involved as well. So that sounds exciting.
And it's only possible due to the unique way the BBC is funded.
Absolutely. Talking of funding, due to the unique way commercial radio is funded, it's been celebrating this week because it's been named the fastest growing medium. 12.5% growth puts it ahead of the entire market. And I've been talking about that with Radio Centre's CEO, Siobhan Kenny.
Fantastic, Stuart. Not only is it a very sunny summer, unusually sunny summer, but we've got these amazing figures. So for radio to be ahead of the internet on year growth in advertising revs is kind of incredible. So up 12.5% year on year. In comparison with overall internet spending, was 10.8. So yes, we are celebrating at Radio Centre Towers, I think it's fair to say.
And we're seeing some big spenders spending even more as well at the moment, which is good.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, lots of our old traditional spenders, so Sky and, you know, all of the companies that have been with us for a long time spending more. Interesting, lots of digital companies spending quite a lot on radio, eBay. We had a fantastic session from eBay at our recent TuneIn conference. So yeah, the growth is coming from across the board, and I would say both in tactical, which people have traditionally used radio for, but also starting to use it for strategic brand building. So that's something that we've been talking about for some time at Radio Centre, as you know. So we're very happy to see that.
And while kind of cinema and newspaper advertising is down, it's radio and it's digital advertising that's up. So where the old media kind of coupled in with the new media doing well?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at, you know, TV and out of home have also had pretty good year-on-year growth. And I think there's something of an auto-correction going on here. I mean, we at Radio Centre, we actually, well, used to share a building with Cambridge Analytica. So we were right at the centre of that media storm when it broke. And there was something about that episode that exposed, I think, the uncomfortable truths about trust and brand safety. And maybe it's something that we've all intuitively known, but that story kind of crystallised everything around that. So I think, you know, some of the, I know they like to call us traditional media, we just call ourselves the media, have sort of benefited from that effect, in my view.
And I guess the fact that commercial radio share of radio listening over the BBC has gone up probably helps you to shout about commercial radio and its successes.
It does indeed. But I mean, for us, I think we look at, obviously, we're particularly concerned with commercial radio. But the fact that the BBC has such a vibrant radio offering as well, I believe, helps to boost radio generally in the UK. And that includes commercial radio.
And in terms of the way things are going to develop, are we on a peak and it's going to drop down again, do you think, in terms of the ad spend?
Well, I'm obviously going to say no to that. I mean, I'm crossing my fingers and saying, I think there are some interesting things going on at present. And that's one of the reasons why radio has done so well, sort of year on year. But on the other hand, we've had a steady period of growth over the last few years, both in advertising revenues and in listeners, as you point out. So digital audio, in a way, is increasing commercial audio inventory. You know, the growth of digital audio listening is, in a way, enhancing the radio offering. People are coming to digital audio listening. I'm talking about advertisers here and looking at this whole world out there that is radio. And that's sort of helping to boost, I would say, overall. So I think that's a trend that's going to continue. Voice-activated devices, of course, very, very important, going to become more so. And, of course, then naturally audio-led. So I think that's making advertisers and agencies think more carefully about how their brand sounds, something, again, that we've done a lot of research on at Radio Centre. People are very, very keen on their visual look of their brand. But when it comes to people who actually have a properly developed audio sound, it is surprisingly few of the big brands even. So all of those things going on together, I think, will probably help this trend to continue. And I'm not being a mystic Meg here, but I'm pretty optimistic that we're going to carry on seeing growth in the years ahead.
And obviously one of the big things that's coming for commercial radio is the changes to regulation. We're waiting for government announcements and things which will hopefully come in the coming months. How do you think those will affect advertising revenue if we're getting more consolidation and fewer local programmes on some of the big brands?
Well, I mean, I think it's fair to say Ofcom are actually consulting at present about how they can sort of change some of those restrictions within the existing legislative framework. I don't know, is the honest answer, whether that will make that much difference. I don't think we're going to see fewer local programmes. I think that's probably not how it will work out, since all of our research shows us that one of the reasons why radio continues to be very strong is that people have a connection with their local radio stations. Obviously, there are bigger national brands as well, but they continue to coexist and will do so, I believe, even when the current regulations are relaxed.
And obviously, the celebration this week's given you an opportunity to get round the agencies and kind of give out some freebies and have a bit of fun with it. And how important is that ongoing relationship between radio and the ad agencies and doing those things?
Well, that's terrifically good news for us to have a moment just to go in and repeat indeed what we're always saying. But of course, you can't be boring. You have to have something new to say. So this is a really great hook to hang it on, just to say, hey, guys, do you realise how brilliantly radio is doing at present? So yes, we've had people giving out energy bars and running competitions for running shoes so that everyone can get on our fast trends that is commercial radio at present. So yeah, it's good. It's just a good opportunity for us.
Siobhan Kenny from Radio Centre talking to me for the Radio Today programme. Roy Martin is still with us, and it's Radar Week this week. Yay!
Yay! As you listen to this, I suspect Radar has been and gone. Yeah. That was interesting, wasn't it, Stuart? I loved Radar this week, this quarter.
Oh, yes. Some great quarterly stories. Brilliant. Really good.
There's a lot of people gone up and one or two gone down as well, I think.
As the numbers get smaller, the
hits get...
audience gets smaller.
Yeah, something like that.
We've been counting them up and counting them down, and you will see all the analysis at radiotoday.co.uk. It's the ARIA's closing date this Monday coming, 6th of August, midnight. Get your entries in if you haven't already.
Is that the same as the ARIA's?
Yes.
Ah, yeah, same event. The closing date is Monday, the 6th of August at midnight. Are you making an entry?
Not personally, no, but I know lots of people who are from various stations, so good luck to everybody who's putting in.
Oh, okay. Me neither.
So that's going to be coming up in October, the awards ceremony. Before that, in September, there's Next Radio and Drive to Digital. Gethin Jones from Hits Radio just announced as the host for Drive to Digital, which is happening on the 25th of September. Ian O'Neill from the Department for Culture, Media and Sport is going to be there as well. There'll be a video address from the new Minister for Digital, well, new in the last year or so, Margot James MP. And Next Radio takes place earlier in the month. That's on the 17th of September, organised by James Cridlin and Matt Deegan. And just announced, James Robinson, producer from The Chris Moyle Show on Radio X. Jane Ostler, used to be at Digital Radio UK, now at Kantar. And Dom Chambers, who's going to be talking about the future of community radio.
Maybe he'll record his In Radio podcast live on the stage. Who knows?
Nice plug. Talking of plugs, we should promote all the great feedback that we've been getting on Twitter. Have we had some this week? No. Okay, let's gloss over that. At Radio Today on Twitter, if you want to tell us what you think of our podcast or suggest topics for future editions, or get in touch with us via Twitter if you want to come on the podcast and play our geek quiz.
Yay, talking of geek quiz, none this week, but we have one lined up for you next week. And Mike Russell is coming on the podcast next week with a set of questions to do Stu versus Roy for us. So I shall look forward to geeking you out.
Ah, Mike Russell from Music Radio Creative, who's going to be telling us about a big podcast event he's been at recently.
Yeah, he was over in the States at Podcast Movement 18, which has quite a bit of radio in it. A lot of radio people there. So we shall be looking at that next week on the show.
And still to come on the Radio Today programme, we're going to hear from David Lloyd with his Radio Moments, James Cridland as well, and in just a minute, Allard Haydon-Jones, off of the Chris Moyle Show, now head of programmes at Radio 1. He's going to talk to us about hide and seek, and I think he's playing hide and seek, because he's in the meeting room, not in the studio.
What? What's he doing in the meeting room at Broadcasting House? Why doesn't he go to a studio?
Well, I tried, but you know what PR people are like, and we have this battle a lot with interviews for the Radio Today programme. If we ask you to come on the programme, it'd be great if you could be in a studio on ISDN, or, you know, at least use a decent quality line.
These days, all you need is a laptop and a microphone. You can use clean feed, you can use IPDTL. There's lots of things that you can use, and you don't have to use just Skype or something rubbish like that.
Well, even with Skype, if you've got a microphone, or FaceTime, if you've got a microphone plugged into your laptop, it actually sounds quite good. But yes, Allard is on a dodgy phone line. Apologies for that.
From Broadcasting House.
The best building in the country for technology, but he's on the phone line in the meeting room. But what he's got to say is brilliant. It's really good, so you'll enjoy that, and it's coming up on the Radio Today programme. Thank you, Mr. Roy. We'll talk next week.
Bye-bye.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
It is the Radio Today programme, and perhaps the biggest talking point of the last few weeks on air was Radio 1's Hide and Seek. Greg James marking his final week on Drive Time by going into hiding with Grimmy and asking listeners to work out where the secret location was that they were hiding. We can find out more about the behind-the-scenes production, how it all worked. I'm really pleased to say Radio 1's head of programmes, Allard Haydon-Jones, is with us on the podcast. Welcome to the Radio Today programme, Allard.
Thank you very much.
So take us back to how this all started. How long ago was this idea for playing hide and seek in Greg's last week? Was it a last minute thing, or was it a long time in the planning?
It was actually back in February that this got first mentioned. I was having a brainstorm with everyone at Radio 1 to come up with some new creative ideas. And because it's quite easy, isn't it, just to be in the hamster wheel of focusing on day after day of shows. So I wanted to take everyone off that hamster wheel, and we spent some time together to come up with some fun stuff. And this was one of the ideas that came up.
In terms of the technicalities of it, was it quite straightforward to just book an OB line, or did you have to be a bit secretive about how you were doing that?
It was incredibly complicated. What was so nice was when it was on air, it was a simple proposition, which was, we're hiding, come and find us. But in order to make all that work with health and safety, legal, editorial policy, and all the steps you need to take, let alone the technological steps you'd need to take to make something like this work, plus the secrecy from so many people in the building, took a lot of planning. So this was our third attempt at getting it on air. And we managed it for Greg's last week.
Ah, okay. So it was the third attempt. What stopped you doing it the first time? People found out?
No. Actually, it was really good how we were able to keep it together. Two producers pitched it. So Greg's producer, Chris Sawyer, and Grimmy's producer, Will Foster, came together and kind of suggested it. So if you date either of them, you're in trouble, because they can keep a secret. They are very good at covering their tracks. And from the very beginning, normally, I don't know how other stations work, but with us, if you have an idea, you work on the creative and you try and flesh that out, and then you do your risk assessment, and it's one of the last steps to make sure everything's fine. On this project, we started with all that things because we knew there would be unforeseen things that would just come up. So there's like a core group of about 8 people, a head of each department there, and it kind of stayed within that group then for months. They looked at all the issues, like if you do an OB, you'd have a satellite truck sat outside. So how do we do one of these without one of those satellite trucks, so people didn't just look for the satellite truck and it gave it away? When it came to health and safety, you didn't want things surprising us, people, I don't know, running across the roads trying to find something or doing something that could put themselves at risk. So we had all that fleshed out before we tried to find the location and also get it ready for the radio.
And I think having it as a bit of fun probably made it easier, because if it was a competition with a prize, you'd have a whole load more paperwork that you would have had to do.
It was discussed we looked at that, where one version had celebrities with us, another one had a prize, so the person who found us would win something. We looked at all the options, and that was what slowed it. And that's what stopped us running the first couple of times, because it wasn't quite right yet. But having said that, with all that conversation, it was kept to a very small group of people. So other senior managers around me didn't know about this. Other program teams and producers and presenters didn't know about this. And what you heard on air on the day was real. So when Scott was asked to hang around until the end of the show, to the start of Greg, he genuinely didn't know what was going to happen. And I even bumped into Scott, and he was like, you know, do you want to give me the heads up? I'm like, no, just, you know, enjoy. So it was good fun.
I suppose if it had had that competition element, people would have been a bit more kind of fighting between each other, but the listeners were helping each other and giving each other clues, I guess.
That was one of the elements that was most discussed in the run-up to this, which was, do we need to do what you traditionally would expect, which is a clue every 10 minutes or every hour? And the decision was made and argued for there to be no clues. And it was like, really, though? How long would this go on for? And when could it end? And how, you know, what happens if it goes wrong and no one gets it or no one cares? Or, you know, so all that was fleshed out. And the decision was made not to give clues. And it was absolutely the right decision, because exactly what you said happened, which was audience members got together and communicated through this, the live lounge and the kind of the incident room kind of vibe we created, and bits of evidence was posted up and shared on social, and it kind of engaged people digitally with some of the clues that were coming up, and bit by bit things were pieced together, which got us to the ending, which feels really geeky to ask our listeners to do, but they did it, and in 23 hours they were found.
And you mentioned the kind of social interaction and the digital side of it. Did that surpass what you thought it might have achieved in terms of trending on Twitter and that kind of stuff?
It did, actually. I expected it to go down well. I expected it to be a good radio listen. And, you know, like, we knew what levers we would pull to make sure that it was enjoyable. I wasn't sure how much noise there would be outside of general radio listening. And the stories we have heard from just people who know we work here and have come to us and said, oh my God, I couldn't believe my daughter was really into this, and she asked me to keep it on in the front room in the evening while we ate to find out if they were found. And it kind of just reached outside the usual listenership, which was really nice. And we've already seen a huge spike in social, as you said, we were trending, and the comments that were being made. Plus, with the use these days of the iPlay Radio app, you get immediate feedback with how many people are listening, and you can see that compared to previous weeks, with each show, with each hour that this went on, the gap between the usual amount of people listening and the actual listening that day just grew and grew. So as people were coming in to listen to Radio 1, they weren't leaving. So it was just a cumulative effect of it getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, I'm not your average radio listener because I flick around a lot, but I probably listen to Charlie Sloth more than I've ever heard him before in my life. And I'd probably go and listen to him again, having tried it. So I suppose that works, because you're encouraging people to sample a bit of your schedule that they've perhaps not heard outside of daytime, and they'll perhaps go back to that.
Absolutely. There were lots of wins for that. So Greg and Grimmy got to fully introduce themselves to the audience of each other's shows. That was a really nice byproduct of this as well. Plus, if you followed it, just like we did with Lolathon Scott or when Greg Afflin happened, listeners would get to hear different parts of the schedule, and how Annie approached this project was different to how Charlie did, which was different to how Jordan did in the morning. It was a real family affair. And the fact that you had Dev offering himself up to go and find them, so went for the strongest lead, getting the train to Birmingham, or Kel phoning from Manchester saying he is there and he's convincing those. That was all lovely, and the listeners took to the family vibe very well as well.
and not just the listeners, but the radio industry as well, because I don't think I heard a bad word about it. Everybody was thinking it was a great idea and it was well executed.
Thank you.
So well done from the industry.
Well, and you know what? The lesson for me there is, because I was obviously Moses' producer, I was in production for, you know, the vast majority of my working life, and it's not to forget that side of it, and actually, and have ideas that can come from production and try and keep them as close to the original idea as possible, rather than do what can happen sometimes, which is when they come from management or they get to management that they change too much.
Thanks for talking to us, Alad. Appreciate that.
No worries. Thank you very much.
At james.crid.land, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, podcast positivity. I spent last week at Podcast Movement in Philadelphia, a conference with 2,300 delegates. It dwarfs any radio conference I've been to. And this was a well-run conference, running to time throughout, with 10 different tracks that delegates could go to. Reflecting podcasting's diverse nature, some tracks were basic advice about how to promote your show or what to do in your podcast intro. Other tracks were rather more commercial in nature, delving deep into cost per thousand, targeting and analytics. Exhibitors offered everything from microphones and mixers to hosting companies and guest booking services. The conference hotel was packed with a bar that was buzzing throughout. The thoughtful organisers had done a lot to encourage a diverse community spirit, even laying on childcare to those who needed it. It was also different for other reasons. It was wildly positive. Podcasting is still pretty small, even in the US. It's 4% of total audio consumption, say Edison Research, and less than a fifth of the population listen to any podcast over the average week. Smart speakers are not being used for podcast listening to any degree, and Google has only just woken up to podcasting. Revenue is small, too. The total US industry earned just $314 million last year. Radio, on the other hand, 58% of audio consumption, including satellite radio. 93% of the population listen every week. And smart speakers are having a significantly positive effect. And revenue, 43 times larger, at $13.8 billion in the US last year. Now, I bumped into a number of people who go to both conferences and all remarked how positive the podcasters were and how negative the radio conferences are. Is it the whiff of freshly raised VC money? Is it the podcasters are younger than radio folk? Is it that they're just more enthusiastic about the medium? I believe there's plenty to be positive about for radio. In many countries, it's celebrating best ever revenue and best ever audiences. And that's why Matt Deegan and I run a radio conference every year. It's called Next Radio, and it's on the 17th of September this year in central London. You'll enjoy over 25 positive speakers with great ideas for radio and podcasting. And you can buy tickets now at next.radio. That's a website, next.radio. But in any case, when radio has far more audience and far more revenue, why aren't our conferences far more positive? Perhaps that's something we can learn from podcasting. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening.
Thank you, James. David Lloyd in a minute. First, just a quick word about CleanFeed. If you've not heard about it before, it's a great way to record audio between two different people in different locations. Whether you're doing an OB or an interview down the line, doing a co-hosted show, CleanFeed is great. It's designed for radio and for podcasts as well, and it's really simple to connect via the internet. The quality is great. You can even record within the browser, and CleanFeed doesn't cost you anything to get started. There's a free version, only takes 30 seconds to sign up, and within minutes, you'll be doing your first live interview down the line or recording something for your show or your podcast. You can find out more about it at cleanfeed.net. That's cleanfeed.net. David Lloyd,
Radio Moments. There are few broadcasters known by a single name alone. One was Wogan. He would have been 80 this week.
I come from Limerick, which is on the mouth of the Shannon, and a place which many other people in Ireland regard as being far from the Athens of the south. But it's a strange and in a sense, lovable little place, very parochial when I was growing up there. I went to school nearly with Richard Harris, the film actor, when I was in Limerick. And he is the archetypal Limerick man. Mercurial and romantic. And given to outbursts of poetry and heavy drinking.
And over now to the auxiliary. I feel like Micheál O'Hare. To say hello to Mrs. Nell Power and Mrs. Cathy Egan. Loving wishes to all from...
My very first broadcast was the cattle market report. I remember when you start broadcasting first, you lose control, you forget to breathe. And so I felt as if the roof was coming down on top of me. That was the most nerve-wracking thing I've ever done in my life.
Well, whatever your political persuasion, you can do this fight-on flab. For the waist and the hips, desperate places where the flab gathers in flocks, making it impossible to get into trousers, skirts, or whalebone corsets, if it comes to that. Right, there you are, kneeling down and wondering if I'm ever going to get started. Well, your prayers are about to be answered.
Yes, it's 88 to 91 FM. Good old Radio 2 from the BBC.
I love radio because I can impose my own pausing on it. I can impose my own timing on it. And because people think while they're listening to the radio.
Donny Osmond must beware. If you care to join me at 4:10 on BBC One television on Sunday afternoon, I'll be introducing the last 10 national entries for the Eurovision Song Contest, which takes place on Saturday week in Paris.
That's the hardest thing I've ever done in my broadcasting career, to say goodbye to you in the mornings. But if not this year, when? 5 years? 10? I'd rather leave while we're in love, as the song says. While the programme is the most popular on British radio, while we still delight in each other's company.
Terry Wogan, born this week in 1938. Farewells on radio are increasingly done in the public glare. Few programmers want to risk the fallout on social media, and in a sense they recognise too that listeners do need the courtesy of a farewell these days. 2 years ago this week, it was Chelsea's turn on Key 103.
It is 12 minutes past eight. We've got Dave calling us. Hey, Dave.
Morning, mate. Morning, Chelsea.
Morning.
Just phoning. I never phone. I just wanted to say goodbye, Chelsea. I'm going to miss you. You're like my second daughter.
Oh, bless you.
My daughter, Samantha, I always say she reminds me just of you. The way your mannerisms, your humour, your wit. I know you have a go at Mike and stuff. She's the same with me. I'm going to miss you. And when Mike said it the other day, when you said you were leaving, I actually teared up. It's honestly like losing my little girl.
Oh,
and I know it sounds a bit gooey and stuff, but you're going to be a mess, girl.
Oh.
Like you.
God, I can't do this.
Okay, over to you, kid. Let's close the show as we always do with a Chelsea life
goal. Okay. Are we playing the jingle or are we not?
No jingle.
Straight in,
it's like the sad end to Coronation Street where they don't play the music.
All right, then. Knowing when to walk away is wisdom. Being able to is courage. And walking away with your head held high is dignity. Take care of yourselves and each other.
That listener relationship never ceases to amaze me. Chelsea Norris leaving Key 103 this week in 2016. She's back on the BBC in Manchester now. This week in 1967, Tony Blackburn made his BBC debut at last on a programme called Midday Spin.
I know that's one of the best records they've made for a very long time. The Ivy League there and suddenly things, and now with a couple of dandelions in each ear hole. Scott McKenzie. If you're going... That's the Wonder Who there. I guess everybody knows they're really the Four Seasons, and it's called Lonesome Road, and there you are. I'm afraid we've just about run out of time. Thank you very much for listening. It really has been lovely doing the first programme on the BBC. Actually, it's great being here. I usually do auditions, but if you can possibly make it next week, love to have you around. So until next week, have a lovely time, won't you? Enjoy yourselves, look after yourselves, and this is Tony Blackburn saying have lots of fun. Be good, and bye for now. Bye-bye, everyone.
Tony Blackburn's actual BBC debut, just sounding that little bit deliciously nervous, as we all do when the big gig comes. That programme appeared at the very tail end of the existence of the BBC Light programme before it split into Radio 1 and 2. The Light programme launched this week in 1945, just weeks after the end of the war.
Good morning, everyone. This is the BBC Light programme on wavelengths of 1,500 and 261 metres. It's the first time we've said those words, BBC Light programme, which we hope are going to mean for you now and in the days to come. All that is best in radio entertainment from 9 o'clock in the morning to midnight.
The start of the BBC Light programme, laying those foundations for BBC Radio 2. So with Chris Moyles beginning at Radio 1 21 years ago...
It was just coming out of the bad times.
Oak FM going off air this week 2 years ago...
And I'm afraid, dear listener, I have some very, very bad news.
The death of Mike Smith 4 years ago...
Mike Smith! Smithy!
And Ed Doolan, later much loved on BRMB and BBC WM, making his first ever broadcast on radio in Germany this week in 1970... Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David. More great audio, including all those memories of Wogan there. Fantastic. Thanks also this week to James Cridland, to Roy Martin, and to our guests Siobhan Kenny from Radio Centre and Radio 1's Allard Hayden-Jones. As we mentioned earlier, next week, Mike Russell from Music Radio Creative will be with us, talking about what he learned at Podcast Movement 18 in the States. Join us for that.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.